Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And your vacillant is a crippling fear, a constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and welcome. Thanks for coming and hanging out for a little while. This isn't a replacement for any kind of real therapy. Think about it more like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And, you know, if something sticks to the wall, you take it off, you put it in your pocket, and you save it for another day. I don't know. Does that analogy work? Don't write me letters, okay, weirdos? Don't write me letters about this shit. I'm a hobbyist in every sense of the word, and that actually leads me right in to the person we're talking to today. We're talking to the very funny and talented Christy Buckley. She's a stand-up comedian from right here in good old sunny Denver, Colorado, and she's been a lot of places, been on some TV shows. You can find her credits. I've really had a good time talking to her, and as a matter of fact, if you want to see her, you can go to the Oriental Theater tomorrow, Saturday, August 11th, 2018. She's going to be with Adam, Kate, and Holland doing a live version of the show Mortified, as you might have seen on Netflix. It's a really good time, and there's still a couple of tickets available, I'm told, so you should check that out. Now, as I mentioned before, I'm a hobbyist at all of this, and one of the ways in which I am a hobbyist is I dabble a little bit in stand-up comedy, and I had a hard time hiding that, comedy boner, if you will, when I was talking to Christy, and so we kind of geek out on comedy for a little while at the beginning, or rather, I do, and she sits there and lets me. So it's kind of interesting to listen to, but I also wanted to make it very, very clear that I'm not putting myself on the same level just because I hit some open mics and, did some cool things. I'm not going to lie. I got a standing ovation once. But we talk a little more about bombing and things like that and how it shapes you as a person. And I think that's really important. The idea of failure. The idea of letting something really awful happen to you for the sole purpose of knowing that you live through it. I mean, that is probably the best thing that you could ever do. I tell a story in this, and so I'm not going to go into it here, but let's just say that the first time I bombed hard, like really hard, like embarrassingly hard, it was the best day of my life. I learned a whole hell of a lot that day. And we get into that a little bit, and we talk a little about bombing. And quite frankly, there's a moment in the episode where it gets a little strange because I say something to her that contradicts a belief that she has, and she kind of has a mini panic attack right in the middle of the episode. So, look forward to that, but I really love her to death. I think she's great. I think you're going to love her to death, too. And so, without further ado, let's talk to Christy Buckley. So, just to get an idea of where we're coming from, so did you grow up here in Denver?
Yeah, I grew up here in Denver. I grew up in Thornton, went to Horizon High School. I've been here my whole life. Mm-hmm. My family's all here. So, yeah, I've been in Colorado. And then the thing that makes me good at talking to people, I guess, is I do stand-up comedy here in Denver. I've been doing stand-up for over 8 years now and work all over town, all over the country. So pretty used to talking about stuff like this pretty candidly, and so that's not a problem, but yeah.
When did that start, like this look at me?
I think it always started, I mean, a big part of what my act is talking about my disability. I have cerebral palsy. And I feel like I always was that way a little bit. It was sort of this like way of controlling, like everyone was kind of looking at you anyways.
Yeah.
And so it's like this way of like, and once you put on the show, you sort of control the conversation about it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did dabble in, well, I'm a drummer, and so I wanted to be a comedian.
Man, drummer.
Right, exactly. Okay. So that says everything that it has to say. But I put my foot in the water for stand-up for about 3 years. And it was just the everything good happens
did it
late
help,
at night.
Yeah. Did it help your mental health or hurt it?
Oh, my God. It actually helped. The best thing in the world, and one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was my favorite thing that ever happened to me in my whole life, the best thing that ever happened to me was I accidentally got booked at a music open mic. They put me on the schedule and they said you can do 20 minutes. And I was like, awesome.
Did you have 20 minutes?
Oh, yeah, I did. And I went through it in about five while people were, you know, eating. And because there's a thing that happens at a music thing that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
at a stand-up
like they're
show.
Allowed to talk during music.
Yeah. Not only that, but they're waiting for silence to clap and then go back to what they're doing. They don't want to listen. And so also if the mics aren't set up right, you're just kind of.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I did 20 minutes. I tried doing some crowd work. I'd never done crowd work before. This was like probably my sixth time doing stand-up ever.
Oh, my God.
And it was the worst bomb I ever had.
Yeah.
It was the worst feeling I've ever had in my life. And the moment I was off stage, I was so happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But why?
Well, because it was like the worst thing that I – it was worse than anything I could have envisioned for how it felt.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, well, now that that's happened and I didn't die.
I like watching. I don't. I mean, most of the time I don't care if I'm bombing, if that happens. It doesn't happen very often anymore. Most of the time I don't care. I actually did bomb this week and it hurt. And I haven't had it hurt in a while.
Yeah.
But it was because this guy that like I've been wanting to come see my stand-up like and he's was like finally made time to come and I just ate shit so hard and like he's like a really successful musician like he's really like and so I wanted to gain a new fan and then I just like ate shit so hard like I haven't ate shit that hard in a while and it hurt like I didn't feel good until I got on this happened on Saturday and then I didn't get feel good again until I got on stage last night. Of course that guy wasn't there to see it
right
last night.
Yeah.
Like wait come but it was rough. I felt like oh god for a while. I even like posted on Facebook. I was like, oh god, I just bombed. Like, don't be jealous. I just bombed. But I normally don't mind it. I don't mind that. It's when I was like, because I was being promoted. I was the headliner. Like, I should have been the best part of the show. And so when you're not, like, I feel really bad. I'm like, don't. I feel like, oh, you shouldn't give me your money. This person's not going to book me again. But like, even though I did my thing and the audience was the weird part of it. Like, you know, I always feel like really guilty. But other times, like if I'm at an open mic or if I'm at, you know, something where I'm not getting paid very much or I'm not the headliner, I like those weird moments. And especially don't mind it if I'm like trying something new, like risky, like risk. It was like, even on Saturday, I was like doing my material, like my normal material. That's what even like hurt worse. Yeah. But it doesn't hurt when you're trying stuff and it doesn't work. Then you're like, that's okay. At least I'm trying some new stuff. But yeah, I do enjoy watching it. I like watching people bomb. I like doing it even sometimes. Because, yeah, it is like one of those things of like, well, if I can survive this, then, you know, I can survive anything. And then, like, after 8 years, I mean, I don't feel nervous or excited or adrenaline anymore. So it does kind of get your, like, blood pumping when you have to dig out of a certain situation.
Yeah. It's like swimming with sharks almost.
Yeah.
It's really exhilarating in a strange sort of way.
Right.
That's why I still like going to open mics and watching, because there's, you can always tell the difference between, you know, the people who are just starting out mm-hmm. and the people who are trying to work out some new stuff in a room that they know won't be friendly. Because right. it's all just comics with their arms crossed waiting for their five.
Right.
And I love it. I love everything about it because you can pick the people out. There's always the guy who was not very sure about his stuff, but his friends told him he's funny. And yeah. so he got drunk and now he's drunk and bad.
Yeah.
And self-conscious.
Mm-hmm. I was in Atlanta here in February and we were doing a showcase at this bar just where they would, you know, at the end of the night, they passed the bucket for us or whatever mm-hmm. as traveling comics. But that night they had booked a guy that every year this fantasy football league, the loser has to do stand up. It's the best. It was the best. And he like, and they're all like rich, like well off, have a wife and kids, have yeah. a, like Southern dudes, like SEs probably love Georgia football, like that yeah. kind of dude. And like, you could tell that he was not expecting to, like, even though he knew it'd be painful, it's still like the hit his ego so hard. Cause after he went up and then didn't do well, he was just a asshole to everybody right. else the rest of the time. Like, yeah, just trying to like almost be funny after like heckle, like be the clever heckles or whatever. And it was just like, you could tell, and he had his arms crossed after that. Like, cause even though it was punishment, it's supposed to be punishment. It was really punishment. Like it really, like he, I don't think he thought that he would bomb that hard. And it was the best thing I've ever seen.
Well, it is the best. And if you're willing to learn from like that level of failure, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And especially if you can find one thing that works, that's the greatest thing in the world. The greatest feeling in the world is to just find one little thing that works and then, oh, thank God. Okay. I got something.
I'm not a fraud. Like every time I write one new little funny thing, I'm like, oh, thank God. I still got, like, you always think the well's going to be dry. There's no more in there. There's yeah. nothing else left. There's no funny joke I'm going to write. No little laugh. Ha ha. Nothing. I've done everything I can. And then all of a sudden something pops out in your head and you're like, oh, thank God. Thank God we found it. Yeah.
So how did you get started? What was your first experience like with, I think I want to do this.
Yeah. Well, my dad had always told me, he told me one time that he's like, I think you could do this. I was pretty young. And I think I just sort of always like kept that in the back of my mind. And then me and my best friend Savannah used to watch every Friday, like in throughout middle school, we watched Comedy Central Premium Blend every Friday.
Oh, yeah.
And so we watched a lot of stand up. And then when I was and actually the first live comedy I ever saw was Blue Collar Comedy Tour Rides Again, because they filmed it at the Buell in nice. Denver. That was the first live comedy I'd ever seen. I was a 14 or 15 years old. And then when I was in college, junior year in college, this guy that I liked was like, hey, I'm doing open mic comedy, you should come watch. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I went, and I was like, I could do better. I immediately was like, I could do better. I could do better than not just him, but like everybody who was there. Yeah. This was in Greeley. I went to UNC. And then he made me set a date for like the next month, like a month from that day. Cause it was every Friday or something like that was the day that we did stand up. And, yeah. And he made me set a date for the next month and I did it from there. And
you just wrote stuff out and said,
I had a lot of stuff written. Cause it was like the time of MySpace where you like have you have little blog posts and stuff. So I'd yeah. written a lot of funny little things that I never thought about doing stand up. So a lot of it I had just transferred over to my stand-up set. Mm-hmm. I did 10 minutes the first time I went out because there wasn't a lot of comics up there. And
nice.
And but Jeff Foxworthy was like the number one comic I watched from the beginning. So because I have a disability, all my jokes were like, you might be crippled if, because I didn't know how else, I didn't yeah. know how else to write a joke. Like,
sure.
That was the only way I knew how.
But that's a unique perspective. I mean, mm-hmm. that's where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not do something with it?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and I'd also seen Josh Blue. I'd seen him on TV. I saw him when he was on Last Comic Standing. And there's definitely like that idea of like, oh, if he's doing this, I could do it.
Yeah.
And it's okay to make jokes about that. And, you know, by some sort of miracle, he lives in Denver and I get, you know, he gets to be one of my best friends now. But like, I watched him as a kid, like, really looking to him as like, oh, if he, like, as a model, like, if he can do it, I could do this. Like, that's, it's okay to talk about. Had I never seen somebody make fun of their own disability on stage, I don't know if I'd ever have been felt comfortable enough to like think that people would want to hear about that. So
right.
It's pretty cool.
Well, and it's how you construct a joke as well, because
yeah.
I mean, there's a way to talk about it and add a punchline to it and keep it human so that it's not really, it's like finding the funny things about being a human with a condition.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that you're giving people a window into that so they can laugh at it
right.
Instead of just being an asshole about it.
Right. Well, and it's still a trick. I mean, it's definitely a balancing act, especially as a woman. I think it's harder. I mean, Josh, like, people don't ever rarely feel sorry for Josh. And I, you know, and that's partly his persona. He's also got, you know, 10 friggin' years on me, but
yeah.
but also you know, like, he's goofy and it's very fun, and so he can make fun of himself as much as they want and they're comfortable, whereas sometimes me as a woman, they're like, oh, like they're knee jerk is like to go, oh, poor baby. And that's what happened on Saturday. It wasn't that I did my jokes wrong or like mm-hmm. did a messed up or anything. It was literally like they tightened up immediately and they were like, oh, like somebody literally did make that noise like right in the beginning. They were like, oh my god, oh. And like that's a terrible, like that's my, and I like that's my least fit, like that's my biggest pet peeve. Sometimes I'll actually like, snap at an audience if they do that, because I really, if you make that noise at anybody other than a dog or like an animal, you don't do it. You're fuck
yeah.
you. Fuck you forever.
It's kind of taking the humanity out of it and
yeah.
making it like something else entirely.
Yeah. Well, not even around my jokes, but if you go, oh, to a human, like you're literally saying that you think that their life is less worth living than yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate that.
Completely.
Yeah. I mean, my mom will still do that if she sees me like walking and my ankles turned real hard. Just because it's tired or whatever, she goes, oh, and I just like, it's my worst. It's triggering to hear that noise, and I put myself in a position every night to potentially hear that noise because I'm sick in the head, I guess. I don't know. But that's what caused like me bombing last week, is like, so they tightened up and then I got a little too defensive too quickly, and then mm-hmm. I got them kind of back by the end, but it took too long. They're like, oh, she got mad at us for feeling sorry for her. How do we act now? And I just didn't handle it very well.
Well, there's that other thing that's kind of happening in stand-up right now. There's
yeah, just
a,
PC
sort of a,
in general.
Yeah, but it's creating something. I don't want to say good, but it is creating something interesting, because we're seeing a lot of different things come out of it. For example, like you look at what Cameron Esposito's doing,
yeah.
And I mean, there's jokes in there, but there's also some pretty heavy dramatic moments in there.
It's testimony.
Yeah. And there's something really interesting to me about that. And I don't know necessarily if it's got to be funny all the time.
Yeah.
I think that there's room for different genres. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see it start breaking out, because the first time I saw an open mic and saw what it really is in real life.
Yeah.
I got really excited that everybody was so nervous and bad, because I was like, oh, this is the
accessible.
Fucking Ramones.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is punk rock.
Yeah.
Like I
yeah.
could do this.
Yeah. It's accessible. It makes it accessible. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel the same way. Like, have you, the new Nanette special
mm-hmm.
is the same kind of way where they
yeah,
stop.
Everybody's talking about that.
I mean, I don't necessarily think that Gatsby or Cameron would call those special stand-up. Like, that's what Netflix is going to bill it, or whatever, Hulu or whatever
yeah,
they're
sure.
using. But, like, those are one woman show, like one man shows, really, and that's okay too, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's more like the internet just gets mad because they think that like comics are like, oh, how could you call it stand-up? It's like, well, she doesn't sell it, you know, like she creates the content and they label it how they want to. She doesn't have control over that. So but I do think it's a good thing. And if like you like I do like that. I love these poignant people who can have these poignant moments and then kind of like, you know, land with a joke. Nanette didn't do that enough for me personally. The poignant moments were too long and there was no like resolve with a punchline. Somebody who does it really well is Chris Garcia. He's in LA now, but he's out of San Francisco. He had some amazing jokes about his dad's Alzheimer's, and you could literally be like crying, like tears coming to your eyes out of like empathy and like feeling for him. And then the next moment, like the hardest laugh, like the hardest punchline you've ever like heard.
Well, like Patton did with Annihilation.
Yeah.
I mean, he just fucking nailed it.
And so, I mean, not to generalize women at all, but I mean, sometimes they want to, that like the feeling side of it, you know, I'm really trying to ride a line here with this statement, but some of us like to live in those feelings and that's okay to still call it stand up. It's just going to be a different thing. And I also have to remind, you know, you got to remind everybody that like, this is, can still be stand up. It just might not be for you. And part of it wasn't for me.
But do you think that any of that might've like, I guess the thing I'd be getting at is, so the other night you ate shit on stage.
Yeah.
But I guess the question is, if things are beginning to evolve and change, maybe the definition of how well you did isn't defined by the same things anymore.
Yeah.
And so you could have had, a good set for these people, but they're, you know, they're all looking at it at a way that you're not looking
right.
at.
Right. Right.
So it's entirely possible.
And I also look
at
it.
I'm trying to put a nice spin on it.
No, I know. I mean, you can't. I mean, there's also a part of it where, like, the comic who went before me, he's a very good comic, Derek Gresh. He, his stuff's very silly. Just silly and, you know, silly voice, silly this, silly that. Not a lot of, like, there's no gut punch to his jokes.
Yeah.
At all. As in, there's nothing that's going to, like, I want to make you laugh despite what I'm talking about. whereas, you know, he doesn't have to get over that sort of hump. So whereas it didn't land the way that I want, or maybe outwardly got the, reaction that I want, I do think that those people are probably going to remember my opinion or my perspective much longer than they'll ever remember what Derek said, which is, that's still a success in its own right, you know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel the same way that I want stand up to feel for me as the performer. But I do think that they went, oh, we are like putting our own, like we're projecting on her what we think, you know, like what we think she should do, or she shouldn't be making fun of this, or she shouldn't be talking about this. Like, I do think that they could have potentially walked away from it in that way. And even my friends who think it's funny, see me do those jokes, Crush, were like, it was so weird to watch everybody not, I've seen you do those same jokes in a different room, kill, and then they're like, tonight, they were like, no. And
instead, you're just making a whole room uncomfortable.
Yeah, but sometimes that's okay with me.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do it in front of a really successful person that I was trying to impress. That's really the only thing in the whole world. They could have been laughing a lot, and I just was like, oh, God, that one person's not laughing.
Because I imagine it could be a lot of fun to just fuck with people like that when they're not giving you what it is you're looking for, because it is sort of a one-sided conversation
it is absolutely a one. You're creating the illusion of a conversation,
right? There's the empathy between people,
mm-hmm.
and you want them you don't need them to like you, you just need them to empathize with you,
mm-hmm.
and if there's an empathy gap.
Well, it's the difference between empathy and sympathy.
Yes, sympathy sucks.
Yep.
Fuck sympathy.
Because sympathy's
not funny.
It's not a useful emotion in any shape or form.
Yeah.
Not at all. I think that everyone should get rid of sympathy in any way. To have sympathy for something is to assume that they're lesser than you in some way. And I don't like that.
It's completely empty. Anyway. You're right. It is a power thing. With sympathy, you're above someone.
Right. I mean, and I have this thing. Yeah, I mean, I can feel it. Like when I get on stage and I'll start talking, I almost feel the audience go, "Oh no, don't say that about yourself. That's not nice."
Yeah.
And my only statement is I have a disability. My statement isn't it's bad, it's good. My jokes are rarely about my disability. It's more about the way that people perceive disabilities or just like adding a certain flavor. But I rarely have a joke where I'm like, oh, poor me, my disability. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the story. And they are the ones that are projecting the like, oh, it's sad that I have this disability. But none of my jokes are really like about, I don't care. Like, it's not my, I'm not like, oh, this sucks. This is the worst. Like, no statement in my stand-up says that. So that's more about them and what they like say or believe about people with disabilities that they should probably fucking check.
People carrying their own baggage into your statements. And so with that in mind, I mean, this is something that you've been living with your whole life.
Yeah.
So for you, it's just how things are.
Right.
So of course you're going to see funny things about it.
Yeah. I have to still get up every morning. I can't think about how much it sucks.
Yeah.
And I don't like when and then when the audience, that's all that they see is how unfortunate it is. That's just like, I mean, I can't make people laugh in that environment. And they sometimes decide as a crowd that that's what's going to, you know, that's what they're, it doesn't happen. Again, please check out my stand-up. I'm very good at this. It does not happen very often at all. But it is. It's like a tricky thing, you know, and you can't control it. Especially after they follow somebody that is so like, you know, like gung-ho, happy, silly jokes. You know, I can't. It's sometimes it's just a gear shift that an audience cannot take with me. They're like, we were just having so much fun. Why are you trying to bum us out?
Yeah.
But they only bumming themselves out by taking it too seriously and having sympathy for me.
Yeah. But tone shifts can be hard to ride out. But I think if the next person is good, they can pull out.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Bob Goldthwait, and he had a guy in the middle. Deacon was emceeing, Deacon Gray from the Comedy Works, and he's great. So he's a good MC. So he was good. The opener was good. And then the guy in the middle was some kind of morning radio shock jock kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his jokes were almost, I don't know. I really bumped up against it because it was a lot of, you know, very, ooh, just almost like get out of America if you can't speak English kind of shit.
Oh.
Like there was a, it was just,
it wasn't my group,
simple, really easy. Like he was very rock and roll. Like let's do coke at 4 a.m.
Sure. Interesting.
And then Bob comes out. And he just looks over at where the guy was and says, Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, let's do this now.
Yeah.
And that was literally and it was awesome.
I can fix that. And maybe that would have been a better way to do it is like, I'm not going to, you know, friggin' dance up here for you guys. Like, it's not going to be the same. Because it's not that Derek was doing bad and I had to pick it up. He's doing very good. And it's just a different
thing.
Tone.
And it's not like that guy that guy I was just talking about was necessarily even bad. It was one of those things where it was like, maybe he just wasn't right for the room.
Yeah, for sure.
Because his jokes, you know, they were, I mean, I thought they were easy, but I think a lot of people are easy. And then...
Yeah, I mean, Comedy Works is easy. Most of it...
Comedy Works is... awesomely easy.
It's supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
That's what they want. I mean, it's for the masses. So.
Yeah, people are there to laugh. They're ready to laugh. They're primed and ready to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you got to do is show up and, you know, be halfway funny. And that's
at Comedy Works, it's easy. Should be so easy.
It should be. I mean, I've seen some other places that definitely are not as forgiving.
No. The place on Saturday was not as good, but the host came up to me and said, well, they didn't laugh for any of the women. And I didn't think about it because I was just like, oh, they're newer comics. Like, I just thought, you know, I wasn't thinking about whether it's a woman or a man, but I was like, you know what? That the opening comic, a guy like did really well, like what better than I've maybe ever seen him do. And then like, yeah, the women got up and it was like crickets, like, and I didn't really think of it as man or woman, but that was his takeaway. And I was like, oh, interesting.
So the
might have just been a real bro-y audience.
Yeah. I mean, you're bound to bump into that sometimes.
Yep.
So with regards to like the disability hasn't been a thing that's different for you. Audiences might bump up against it sometimes. But I mean, have there ever been times where, I mean, you like I said, you've lived with this thing for your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know a lot about it.
Okay.
So are there times when, you know, you wake up in the morning and it's like, you know what? This fucking sucks.
Oh,
it's
every
just
day.
Not fair.
Oh, no, it's every day.
Like,
I've done a lot of like storytelling stuff where mm-hmm. I do talk about that. You know, that's why I liked watching Chris Garcia talk about Alzheimer's, where mm-hmm. he had these moments of like showing people this harder part and then mm-hmm. still being able to follow up with such like a strong laugh. And so that's something I definitely would love to bring people. And that's something that makes me different from Josh, I think, is like his stuff doesn't ever go on to the darker side. Like it never goes on to the dark side of like, this actually sucks. He's like, this is how I am and it's awesome. Fuck you. Like that's his, but that's not who I am. That's not how I see it. And so mm-hmm. that does bleed into my comedy in, you know, in certain ways in a different tone for sure. So, but yeah, I mean, it happens a lot, and especially as I'm getting older, my body hurts more. It's hard, and you're like, yeah, am I gonna get too exhausted? Like, can I get up every night for 45 minutes and stand on my feet? Like, it's scary. And it does, like, it's part of the struggle of mental health all the time because there's no, I can't get out. Like, I can't leave my body in any way other than to leave my body. And so like that, it's definitely been a dark, it gets dark and it's, you know, if I'm busy doing day to day, I don't really think about it, but even outside I'll be like doing my thing and then I'll notice somebody staring at me and it's just like, gets heavy, like all of a sudden for a second, you know, and but you just keep going. But it is a really tough, thing, and it's hard. I'll probably reference Josh so much on this because he is just such a good it's finally good to have like a friend that has cerebral palsy. I didn't really ever have any like other disabled friends mm-hmm. and so it's always good to have somebody that like can commiserate, just especially about the way that your body sort of ages when you have a cerebral palsy. So that's been really good. But yeah, it's tough all the time. I mean, how dark do you get? You got pretty dark.
Oh yeah.
I don't care. It's hard all the time. Your body hurts more. So when you have depression, your body hurts more.
Yeah.
And on top of that, your body hurts. For anybody who doesn't know what cerebral palsy is it's basically it's basically traumatic brain injury, but happens before birth. So, you know, whether you're premature or you had a, you know, blood on your brain or forceps a lot of times, or, and sometimes it like that you can get it from shaken baby syndrome. You know, if you're very early on, it could cause it later. You know, all that type of stuff. So it affects your motor skills, and some people have it so much worse
mm-hmm.
Than I do. Mine's very mild, just affects my legs for the most part. It does. And it's something to kind of, everybody can kind of like forget about, even me, you know, it's that mild, but a lot of people say that to me, like, oh, I didn't even notice. And they like, think it should be like a compliment or something. I don't know, like that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't even see it. So, you know, doesn't that make you feel better? It's like, not, I mean, no, cause my leg still hurts. So it doesn't really matter whether you see it or
does
not.
Does it make
really
you feel
shit.
Better?
Yeah,
that you
exactly.
Didn't see it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it does get really tough. And as my body gets older, I'm like, why would anybody want to Like, why would anybody want to be in a relationship where it's like you'd have to take care of me and it's a bummer and like we can't go hiking, we can't do like all this stuff. Like, I always think like that's such a burden, and every time I'm lonely in like a really dark place, I'll be like, of course, why would anyone want to love me?
Yeah.
I'm laughing so hard.
And no, that's I mean that's depression anyway. So to take something like that and to tack it on, like, I mean on guess top. What your body is gonna have a hard time, and you know what else, just for fun, your brain.
Yep, your brain on top of it's gonna talk to you like you're a real piece of shit.
Yeah,
every day.
And not only is it something that you're gonna carry internally, mm-hmm. you're going to be externally reminded of this.
Yeah.
And so to be hit with a double whammy of one disability and depression, that's,
yeah.
When did you start figuring out that you were going to have to start putting together some defenses?
I would say I probably did it pretty early on. I mean, I was, when you do a lot of surgery when you're a kid, mm. when you have cerebral palsy. So I was in a wheelchair for part of like first grade, third grade, and fifth grade. And that to me was even bigger of a thing. And so you ended up just creating the ability to talk to people, or at least to like do other things, whether it's writing, or because I'm not out playing soccer with other kids, I might be writing, I might be doing other stuff, listening, you know, doing music, things like that.
Yeah.
And so you just develop these other different skills. I read a lot, and you just do it out of necessity. I don't think I consciously was like, oh, well, I can't do this, so I gotta figure out how to get people to like me. I mean, and that's one thing.
A good way to do that has always been becoming a nerd.
Yeah, yeah, yep, exactly. Well, but that's also a thing that I gave away up a long time ago, is that, I don't really care what people think. I have no emotion on what people like or dislike, or if they like me or want to, like, I don't care. It's only until like that person sort of jumps through a few hoops and becomes important that I really care too much, almost like what the people who are close to me think. But when it's just like the average person, like I don't spend any time on, you know, I have no shame, I have no embarrassment, there's nothing there as far as like a give a fuck about what they think or what they say about me or anything. Like, there's literally no, I get in trouble because there's almost no, I have no connection to people when it's like a superficial
yeah.
relationship, not whatsoever.
Well, I
can't even be polite about it sometimes.
Well, I have some of that too. Just from having a manic depressive kind of, I've actually been told by a handful of people, but no one professional, because why would I get that checked out, that there's probably a low level Asperger's happening, just because of that same sort of thing. You know, I don't register people, completely. And it, until I do.
Yeah.
And then when I do, it's like, oh, you're there. It's like a bright spot in the universe all of a sudden. Yep. And
everyone else is like faceless until they're not.
Until they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel that same way.
I wonder if that has anything to do with just the very idea of defending yourself against the world.
Yeah, well,
so often and so much, yeah. just as a neutral state of being.
Yeah, I've written about that before, is where I feel like, you know, when you're younger, your disability, you know, while it does suck, I think that it does create this like filter. Like, if somebody's an asshole, like and that's important to them, like when they see you walk weird and that makes them uncomfortable, they're not going to come talk to you. They're people I never met, you know, like they're people that don't even look me in the eye. But I don't necessarily notice that. It's just that I grew accustomed to like a lot of people not trying to like, or wanting to like be a friend or be know me. And so I just really don't put an effort towards people until way down the line, because I just assume this person doesn't want to know me until like we have a really big reason to talk to each other. And so I come off as like aloof and cold, and I don't like know people. I don't say hi. I don't say, you know, don't say anything to people for a long time. And they're like, oh, Chrissy's so mean. It's like, no, I'm not mean. I'm just literally like, I don't assume that you want to talk to me. Like, it's not that I think I'm too cool. Because as an older comic now, 31, I'm freaking veteran now, but as an older comic in the scene, a lot of people know who I am, and I don't know who they are, and I don't say hi, and I don't I'm not very good at, you know, shaking hands or saying good job a lot of times because I just don't know them. But it's not because I think I'm like so much better. It's because I literally, like, no matter who you are, I'm like, I don't assume, why would you want to know me? Like, why do you care, like,
yeah,
about me?
Well, there's a lot of disappointment on the other side of mm-hmm. most people usually, and so why be open to that?
Yeah,
it just doesn't make a lot of scientific sense if you're just going down the list of
why would I keep
reasons.
Putting myself out there. Yeah. And that's just something, I mean, and I don't think most adults are that way now, but I think that kids are that way, and mm-hmm. that's where you learn your earliest social interactions.
Sure.
You know, in sixth grade, most kids aren't gonna like come up to me and talk, so I'm like not used to people that, like, these younger kids in comedy now are just people that are like, oh, that was like, they actually want to talk to me, and that's so foreign to my brain,
right?
And I got used to not wanting to talk to them. Like, it's easier to not want something than to want it and then be rejected, I guess.
Well, and Denver's a weird city for that. Like I grew up off in Michigan, and everybody's that I grew up with in the pocket that I grew up in, was pretty standoffish, you know, and there were all of these things. Like I lived in a pretty rough area. And so it was like, I moved out here and people will be friendly,
mm-hmm.
just generally.
Yeah.
Like at a grocery store or hi, how's your day? Sure. You know, or things like that. And I'm just immediately, it's like, I don't have any money. Like,
yeah, it's a different thing. So yeah, people are nice here.
People are pretty nice here generally, but that was a barrier for me that mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of. And I still find myself bumping up against that because mm-hmm. I still have that same thing, just like sure. you, that appearing to be aloof. Whereas really it's just I'm
insecurity.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly, like, I don't know what to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you want. I don't know what you're looking for.
Right, and I'd rather just not deal with it.
Let's save both of us the trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't have to be your problem now.
Yeah.
And so
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Feel that. 100%.
So the depression is something that has always kind of been there for you, or is it something that you find grows like as you get older?
I think it's always been there. I mean, I remember at a young age, you know, having to, you know, talking about like, do you need to go to a therapist? And and I also think that, and I don't know if this is my cerebral palsy or not, but when you have cerebral palsy, like, sounds, like bangs and sounds and stuff, like, make you jump, and everything feels, especially with sound and like any abruptness whatsoever, feels so harsh mm-hmm. to you. And so I sometimes feel like that might carry over to emotions, where any change or any, you know, abruptness with the way somebody treats you or yelling or just any hardship feels so much bigger than it probably does for the average person. Because mm-hmm. it invokes the same, like, physiological, like feelings in me where, you know, then like a loud bang, if I was in a constant like war zone or something.
Yeah.
Is how I sort of feel. And then I like curl up and want to lay down and just curl up and die literally.
Yeah.
But everything just feels so loud. And so like when I'm depressed, everything feels so loud, feels so harsh, feels so abrupt, feels so heavy.
Heavy is definitely the right
word. And I feel like it actually literally might be connected to my disability in that way. And my brain probably works a little bit differently when it perceives emotions and interactions and things like that. So, but I've had it, yeah, my whole life. I mean, just being in a wheelchair as a kid when you're not normally in one for long periods of time was just like, you can't. And when you're not getting exercise, and it's harder to get exercise physically now it is, and then it was, I mean, that's going to lower your, you know, ability to produce serotonin and dopamine and whatever. So,
were your parents pretty good about trying to figure stuff out?
About mental health?
About all of it. I mean, because I would have to imagine that there's a learning curve that comes along with just about everything. Kids are weird enough to begin with.
Sure.
You know, you don't really know what you're doing at all.
Yeah.
It's not really even a matter of if your parents are going to fuck you up, it's how.
Yeah. Well, I think as humans, we're all tend to make it about ourselves, and they did that a little bit also. And I think that I think my mom still carries a lot of guilt, with the fact that I have a disability, very, very much so. But I think my dad wanted to fix it. And then my mom was just so like, oh, I mean, she still does that. But I know they both carry a lot of guilt as to why I have a disability. And they didn't know, I mean, they didn't really know how to take care of it. I mean, I went to the doctor, but then I stopped going around middle school. And like, there wasn't any, I mean, but they never addressed the mental health side of it at all.
Do you think it was just too much, or did they not really understand that? I mean, it was two separate issues that were sort of symbiotically working together.
They were very good at being like, you're just, well, especially my dad, very good at being like, oh, you're just like everybody else. You're just like everybody else. Like, don't treat her different. So if we want to, to address the mental health side of it would have been to acknowledge it maybe too much. I don't know. And then just to do the depression on its own is its own stigma. So, I mean, that's two things that are just like tough to like sort of face and act, you know, treat. And the way that I'm only realizing maybe in the last 5 years how connected they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the one thing exacerbating the other.
Mm-hmm. And back and forth. I mean, when my serotonin's low, my legs hurt worse. When my legs hurt, my depression's worse. Like, they feed each other so much. And it's not something that I realized until maybe, you know, literally 5 years ago. It's definitely not something we talked about, you know. They didn't know. They didn't really do that. They didn't really offer... I mean, they might have offered therapy, but when you're a kid, you're like, no. Like, you just have to, they should have just made me do it, you know, but I don't remember ever having to do that. And
was that a thing you did, was try to make them feel better?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I did. Just because, I mean, my parents' divorce was really bad. They were divorced. And so it was more about their relationship than ours, I think, for most of it. And I don't know if they ever acknowledged the strain of me having a disability probably put on their marriage. I mean, it was doomed without me. I'm not going to put the blame on me, but, but it's hard to have a special needs child, and they both carried a lot of pain and guilt and anger at each other. My dad made moving boxes or something, and my parents got in a fight, and my mom finally agreed to help him move a box or a couch or something when she was pregnant, and then she went into labor within a couple hours. And I know that they both like carry this like, we were fighting, caused this, what, you know, like a very heavy, and I mean, I probably would too. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to let them off the hook by any means, but they're not going to listen to this. But I mean, I know I didn't find, and again, I didn't find that out till like probably five years ago either. But that it made a lot of sense, where my mom held so much heaviness and so much guilt and sadness. And my dad just really want, like, really wanted to fix it, like wanted to make it better. And yeah. I know that
the dad thing, both of just, the, I don't know what this is, but we got to fix it.
And especially if in your mind you maybe caused it, it's gotta be very heavy. And that's going to naturally happen, regardless. You know, but they have a very like tangible cause and effect to like what they, and it might have not been that at all, but you know, I know that that's what they think happened. And they never told me that until about 5 years ago. And it makes a lot more sense as to like either the avoidance of like, oh, you're just like everybody else. Like, I don't want to, if we pretend like everything's fine, then we don't have to think about it, or looking at it too hard. Sometimes
look, just try the ice skates on.
Yeah,
just
exactly. No, that happened so many times, God. Well, and my parents, this is really, I've been trying to find, write a joke about this, but my parents, they met at Skate City. They both had roller skating jobs. My mom was a waitress at Sonic. That on the roller skates. My mom actually used to do like roller skate dancing for Halftime Nuggets shows and stuff. And then Mike came out with these dumb legs and ruined everything.
Oh, that's
ruined the dream.
That's kind of amazing.
If I could find a way to write it into a joke, that'd be super great. But
yeah, there's definitely something in there.
Yeah. It's more like a lot of parents tell you, like, you didn't, like, it's not your fault. Like, when they get divorced, it's not your fault. It's like, no. It's my fault. It was me.
It was me. It was definitely me. So yeah. Did you end up deciding that you were going to, go to therapy or something like that to address the depression?
I've gone when it's like real dark. Probably 4 years ago was when it was really bad. I actually had to have my boyfriend called for me and made an appointment, just because those basic day-to-days when you're like that gone is like too hard. It's too hard. Like, I mean, there's been times where I'm like it's taken me 45 minutes to put my second shoe on. Like, it's, you know, it's so difficult. And so that I have done it. And then, you know, we deal with our healthcare system to try and finagle that. But I have, when I get really dark, I'm actually like working on it right now as far as trying to get back into therapy. I mean, everybody should do it all the time, so it's not
just to check in.
Sure, absolutely. But it was a point to where like I was like, I don't want to be alive, so I gotta go talk to somebody, you know. And I've never like made plans to like kill myself or anything. It's just like, man, I wish this bus would hit me. Like, and I mean it so much.
Yeah.
Like, I literally want, I just want it to stop. Everything feels so loud. Everything, sure. Like, just want it to stop. And, at those moments I've had to like have somebody make the call.
Yeah.
For me. 'Cause I was like, I can't, it's too much dialing. It is so difficult to explain to people, that those basic tasks are so hard. My friend, Heather Snow, who unfortunately died a year and a half ago, she had leukemia, but she was depressed and she explained it to me. She explained it to her boyfriend. She goes, "You get sad because your dog died. I get sad because I have to go get the mail."
Yeah.
And it's like, so, it's like absolutely true. Like, these tiny things just feel so big. And I know, like, my logical brain is like, what's wrong? Like, don't, why? And that's why the stigma exists, is because people don't understand how, like, literally tying my shoe is so hard right now.
Yeah.
Literally, like,
you can look down at your foot and just think to yourself, I just wonder how long it would be if I just decided to curl forward and wait until I become dust.
Yeah.
How long would that take before I become dust?
Yeah. And it's not even, for me, it's not even, it's not a sad feeling. It's like a no feeling.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Exactly. It's, I don't want to participate in this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, I just, my nervous system is shot. I literally cannot feel any of this anymore.
Yep.
I just can't. And I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, good luck with your brunch.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. It's so, it's such a weird, experience to really explain. I mean, I think everybody maybe has it a little bit. I don't know, though. But
I don't know. I think everyone experiences sadness.
Yeah.
And obviously that's the empathy point. Mm-hmm. Because everyone can experience sadness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, you know, your dog died. You're going to feel that. Mm-hmm. Someone in your life treated you unfairly. You're going to get angry. You're going to be sad. You're going to feel a lot of things. There's an outside stimulus that comes at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to react to that stimulus. But what happens when you wake up in the morning and waking up and breathing tells you that nothing's worth it?
Uh-huh. It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts. Even though it doesn't, like, physically hurt.
It can.
Yeah. I know.
Like that cold pit in your chest.
Yeah.
That just demands to be fed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so bad. I mean, I had a friend recently that she had a near, when she was giving birth to her daughter, it was really bad and she almost bled out. Yeah. And like, she just remembers the whole room like going black. And since then, she's fine now. It's been years. Since then, she's like, what's the point? She can't get past it.
Yeah.
It's like nothing matters. I almost died right there on that table. Nothing.
Yeah.
That's what happened. She was like, none of this matters. None of it matters anymore. Like flipped a switch in her brain where she's just like, I can't. Why do we go to the grocery store? Why do we do anything? Like, none of this makes any sense. What are we doing? Like, and I can't, that's a whole other level that I can't even, you know, I come in and out of that, but man, she's, I can't be, I would like to hope that if I ever wanted to kill myself or actually got the opportunity to get hit by a bus, I would hope my brain would be like, wait, no, I want to live.
Right.
If you think about it, that is
a reaction.
Yeah.
It's a reaction to that, because it's not even necessarily a matter of I want to live. When those depressive moments start mm-hmm. telling you that you want to kill yourself or that you want the bus to hit you, you want something to intervene, you're looking for an end to what's happening right now.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. And so to be able to recognize those moments when they start hitting you
mm-hmm.
and to recognize, oh, I didn't order this.
Yeah.
This is coming in from elsewhere. This isn't me. This is chemicals that accidentally went through the wrong tube. And now guess what? I get to feel like this.
Yeah.
And so to be able to recognize those things as being outside of bounds of where your personal normal is, the feeling that it's trying to give you is, make this thing go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes the only thing that makes sense is something insane like a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't make sense.
Right.
If you think about it, because if you've had those moments more than once,
mm-hmm.
you know they pass. It's just the emotions you're getting, whether they're caused by anything or not, they're real.
Yeah.
You're still feeling them. You still have to live with it. Yeah. I mean, just because you poured out all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle and you can see the border, it's not solved.
Yeah.
It's just complete. Part of it. You're going to, it's a thing that people are, I think, misinformed about because they're looking for a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really a solution.
No.
The solution is,
keep going.
How am I going to live with this?
Yeah.
How am I going to manage this?
Right.
How am I going to take control of this so that, like, mm-hmm. I have a little bit more autonomy over myself when this bullshit happens?
Yeah, I can get my shoes on.
Yeah, I can get my shoes on. Or, you know, I don't want to get my shoes on, but here I am tying them anyway, even though I know it doesn't matter.
Yep.
I'm doing it anyway.
Yep. Totally. It's really weird. I have to admit to you, I forgot I was doing this podcast until you messaged me yesterday. And because I just missed putting it on my calendar. I'm glad that I'm glad you messaged me. I'm glad to be here. That's not the point. The point is, just last week I posted a, I don't know, cry for help, I guess, is because I I've been feeling this way, and but my work, but comedy doesn't stop.
Yeah,
it doesn't stop. And I mean, I literally have 4 days where I have multiple shows this week, and every other day I still have one, and I still have my day job, and I'm like, I can't put my shoes on. So, yeah. I think it's so interesting. Yeah. But I am like functioning, but it just feels like the wheels are like coming off, or they're going to. And I just had to be like, whoa, hey, everybody, I need help. Like, and you know, and I'm like a single woman. I don't have a partner. You know, my family has been going through. I had a nephew who was born very prematurely here a few months ago, which has been, it's been interesting, because that was definitely some post-traumatic stress for my parents. I saw it for the first, like from when I was born, I could feel it on them, and the extra stress that it added to them. But so my family's sort of focusing on that thing, which is totally fine. That's where it belongs. But yeah, so I just had to literally like just stop and ask for help, even to know that people were like, I'm here if you need to talk. You know, what are some ideas for putting work down? Like, it was too much. It's too much right now. It's really too much. And I, literally was like, I've been drinking too much.
Cause bus, I mean, that'll fix it.
Yeah. That'll fix it for real. Well, a thing I do, and it is like that feeling of you want this like to stop, or you want to feel something.
Yeah.
I fall down a lot, or I bump things a lot when I'm drinking. And I know that I use drinking as a, it's like cutting, but like from internally, like,
yeah.
Cause I'll wake up. I mean, I had a scab on my face last week. I have a bruise down my leg right now, just cause I really, and it's, again, it just is literally like feel something, like feel like, I don't know what, yeah. I don't know how else to, explain it really, other
to
than
to try
like,
to wake you up.
Yeah. Like, I'd rather be hurting than nothing, like, yeah. Than to be this
hurting
robot.
Is way better than numb.
Oh, so much better. And I haven't drank for 2 days, which is, you know, fine or whatever, but yeah, so I thought it was really interesting that I forgot about this, and now here I am. But but no, that's definitely the thing, is where right now everything feels so overwhelming, and the work won't stop, which, you know, thank God, when you're a freelancer, like, that's how it is. You just collect money. How it is, but it's really hard to say no to gigs. It's really hard to stop. It's really hard, yeah. to take a break. And I just like, yeah, I don't know. And so it's, I'm definitely like in coping mode right now, where like, I can't stop, but I'm scared I'm gonna have a breakdown. Like Ben Roy hit me up. He's a comic in Denver.
Yeah.
He had a breakdown last year. He put him in the hospital because he was doing the same thing, where he was going, and then he just hit a wall. And I'm like trying to avoid this feeling of like hitting the wall right now.
Yeah, I've been talking to him. He's busy.
Moment. He's so, always busy, but he'll come.
We're circling.
Yeah. He's a great person to talk to. But
I love his band.
Yeah, they're so good. They're so good. But so that's where I'm at right now. I'm doing this, and the fact that I get on stage and you have to put this smile on and make people feel things and feel happy, and you're like, I'm a robot. I don't know what's going on right now. And and last night really helped. It really like brought me out of it a little bit. It was a really good set, a lot of like good energy and stuff. But like, man, the other night, like Saturday, it just felt like they were take of my energy, and they gave nothing back. And I was just like, I was done. I was like, I can't. And then the host of the show was like, can you do more time? And I'm like,
I couldn't even put my shoe on.
I know. I was like, I'm barely got here, but you can't. It's like, I haven't washed my hair in 4 days. Like, I can't. I was like, sure. But then he's like, I'll pay you more money. And like, okay. Like, you do. That's what you do when you're an artist. You have to go where the money is. You can't show up to work and like sort of, you know, cash, like fucking sit on your butt today, and tomorrow you'll work harder, and you know, save up your vacation days. You don't get vacation days. I don't get accrue vacation days. So, and it's sort of this feeling of like, when can I breathe is this feeling I'm having right now. Cause even like, I posted my schedule and my friend Ron was like, saw that I didn't have shows for two nights finally in a row. And he's like, well, can you take it off? I was like, I mean, yeah, but I still have to, it's Monday, Tuesday. I still have to go to my day job. So it's not really, yeah, I haven't had like a full day off to do nothing and, you know, to enjoy my life or do just lay there and cry or anything for a really long time. So, it's part of that too, is where this is the first time I've been dealing with the depression on the level where I didn't have sort of this job, like the regular day job. Like the last time I was this depressed was like 5 years ago and my life looked completely different. I wasn't this freelancer that can't say no. I was a person who didn't have very many shows and I could call into sick for a day.
Yeah.
And it's not the same way right now. And I'm not sure how to like keep the energy up and keep going and show up for these people and make them laugh and earn my money. And but it's fine. It's good to talk about it. Thank you.
Well, there's a certain number of boxes that you have where you're putting your energy.
Mm-hmm.
And people have all these ideas about what self-care is and what it means, but it's a very individual thing. So for you to have these moments of darkness that you're making peace with in the way that you know how to make peace with them.
Yeah.
And that's to be busy, because if you're busy, you're going to get up. You're going to go.
I have to. Yeah.
Yeah. And at some point does the thought ever cross your mind that maybe my set tonight is going to be the thing that snaps me out of it?
I don't want to ever put that much pressure on my set to be
right, because you can't be doing it
and
to
I can't
save
control,
your life.
Well, I can't control it. Yeah, right.
Because once it's there to save your life,
I just freaked out. Okay, sorry.
I don't mean to put that on you.
No, you cannot do stand up to save your life.
You can't do anything to save your life, because once you give it that much power,
that's a scary idea.
Yeah.
For me, it's for you to say you can't do stand up to save your life.
Yeah?
I'm okay. I'm not going to cry. Everything's fine. No, I can't.
No. I mean you can certainly make it important.
Sure.
You can make it your focus. You can make it your lover, your best friend. You can make it all those things. You know that know where other people have pets and polyamorous relationships and boyfriends and girlfriends and Netflix and whatever they got. Everybody makes decisions on where they're going to put the thing that's going to make them feel like who they are when they're at their best.
Right.
And a lot of people spend time in avoidance of who they are because they don't want to see themselves because they already know they're not at their best.
Right.
And I think that's what causes lethargy and things like that. And so for what you're doing, while I would definitely say, in my opinion, as a person who doesn't know anything and has a podcast, I would say, yes, stand up cannot save your life, because you can't give that much power to your art. You just can't, because the moment all of the conditions that you need to make that art the way that it was are gone and they change, now your relationship to your art changes. And you don't want
that
either.
No, it's terrifying. It's terrifying all the time. I'm afraid the bottom will fall out.
Yeah.
Almost all the time. But also in this other way, when so fun. I have a shirt that literally says stand up saved my life. Just so you know.
Yeah.
It's hard when all these other things happen, you know, with family or my boyfriend breaking up with me or losing a job or anything that for 8 years has literally been the thing that's like there. Like if everyone else is gone, like there's an open mic tonight. Like, that is literally the thing. So, yeah, it is finding. But now that stand-up is my job and not my, you know, 100%. It is my passion, my calling, whatever you want to call it. But
sure.
But it's still like a job now. So like it's not creating the same haven as it used to. And so that's probably what's causing these problems. I just realized this for the first time. We did it.
Good job. All right. High five.
Yeah, we did it. I think that's probably the main problem, but I don't have time or the money to say no to gigs.
Sure.
And also like, well, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
But that's exciting. That's an exciting question to ask myself.
It's a really exciting question. It might be the most exciting question is to find yourself in a situation where you have to ask, what am I going to do? Because you start running out of options, mm-hmm. especially when you're putting things in the boxes you always put them in.
Yep.
And now it's not and bringing the comfort it used
they're
to.
They're too full.
Yeah. So what do you do?
I don't know, man. This is your podcast. You tell me.
I'm not a doctor. I'm just a goofball trying to figure this shit out just like you are.
Right. I don't know what the answer is. I literally posted this like on Friday, this revelation of like, I can't breathe. Everything's too much. And my gigs won't stop and my life feels so heavy. That's what I imagine people. I mean, it was typed on Facebook, but I imagine that's the way they heard my voice when they read it.
Well, I mean, you can hope.
I can hope. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough time. Cause you're not quite like as much as I appreciate, Ben or Adam. I heard from Ben, Adam, and Andrew. All of them hit me up. All the Growlics hit me up about this post telling me to, you know, slow down, take care of yourself. You're going to be okay. You can say no to gigs, but also like, right now, I'm still like, even when I have a night off, I'm expected to sign up at Comedy Works for a free set just to try to get. I'm not yet a pro or being paid by her, and so I'm still expected to sign up on my nights off to give to her for free, working for free.
Yeah.
I'm still expected to, you know, run a show over here or write something for a show over here. You know, like you don't have the luxury yet of being so sought after. Like I'm sought after as on the day to day, but I'm not so sought after that my gigs are paying enough that I can just take a few of them and not all of them.
I'm a drummer. You don't have to tell
me
nothing.
Yeah. You get it.
Yeah. I was a songwriter for a while, as well. And that also pays, you know, like whatever the opposite of awesome is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's interesting, but the advice that I would give if I was ever a person who was going to give advice.
Sure. Is, way to dance around that.
Exactly.
No, it's
because
fine.
I don't want responsibility for my advice fucking up your day.
Sure.
So let's say this is your idea.
Okay. This is really Inception. This is, I'm excited to hear what I'm thinking.
Well, let me tell you.
Okay.
What you're thinking is a way for, now you might not be able to take days off. Things like that.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you don't need a whole day.
Yeah.
Because I find that in some moments, it's enough to take a moment. I mean, push the universe completely away.
Yeah.
And just check in with yourself now.
Mm-hmm.
Just now. Where am I at right now? What's happening right now? What's the pain in my hip? What's mm-hmm. the pain in my foot? What's the pain in my neck?
Mm-hmm.
The literal pain that I'm feeling right now, what is that? Focus on that. Stay there with it and just live with it for a moment and live with nothing else.
Right.
The walls aren't here. The people aren't here. Nothing is here. Mm-hmm. You're just checking in with yourself mm-hmm. and centering in on a thing you can count on.
Yeah.
Your own pain.
Yeah.
And you can count on it.
I love
and
that.
There it is.
That
and it's
is the
yours.
Only thing.
It's yours, and you're experiencing that in that moment, and that
and it's
is
like
the
bombing because it's
it
like
is.
You get to
you're
feel
alive.
Yeah,
you're alive, and just check in with yourself, feel that pain, soak it in, mm-hmm. and just go, "Yep, that's mm-hmm. that's the stuff. That's yep. the butter on the pancakes
I did,
right there."
Well, last week when somebody somebody said, go do a float tank, which I've been wanting to do. And I did it that day because I was just like, I can't breathe.
Like
and
the saltwater tank?
Yeah,
where
it really did. I mean, it's a very fancy way to check in, but it really did help. It really, like, because it was quiet, it was dark. Like, literally, I can't explain how loud and how bright everything feels when you're depressed.
Yeah.
Everything feels so... And it was just, it was great. I really recommend it. And they're like, I go to Samada, and they're doing this thing right now. I'm going to plug them for free. They don't even pay me. But they, they're giving, if you buy like a float on a gift card, they give 15% to MAPS, which is the people who are doing research on psychedelics on for post-traumatic stress and depression and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, they're awesome. Anyways, I did it, and I did it for the first, and it was hard. It was hard. I couldn't believe how hard it was to...
Because you were just in there with
it's
you?
It's 90 minutes. For 90 minutes.
Jesus.
Yeah. I got into that zen moment for like... I mean, it took about probably 25 minutes to like truly relax. I hadn't done it before. And then I probably was in the zen moment for like 10 minutes, and then... It popped out of like then I like forgot where I was for a second, like maybe almost fell asleep or something, but it popped up and then I'm like and it like literally took me another I know there's a plane up top.
There's a plane,
guys, it's gonna be okay. But it literally I like freaked out and you can't see, and then and I got turned around in the tank, but it was almost like I still in that moment had to use like my yoga breathing and be like, okay, like breathe, everything's fine, you're not hurt. But it literally I couldn't believe how like wound up I was that I couldn't do nothing in the dark.
Yeah.
And that's something I truly do want. I mean, I'm gonna go back, I want to practice it, I want to be able. And I got, in order to conserve my energy and be this busy, I do have to be able to turn it off quick.
Yeah,
quicker. That's the problem I'm having for sure.
Well, I mean, I can't even fathom that. I mean, I know that, Jesus Christ. I mean, what? You're talking about like 90 minutes by yourself.
Yeah, I know you're talking about five, but I mean, I mean, that's how much I like.
I get it.
I had to pay $65 in order to make myself do it.
It's like you're telling me, you know, the very idea of it is like, you know, going into the ocean after you've seen Jaws. Like, uh-huh. I can't fathom being alone with myself for 90 uh-huh. minutes.
It was hard.
That
it
is my hard. Horror movie.
But, like, the fact that, but, like, that's almost like, it's just like being on stage and bombing, where you're like, well, now I did it, and I survived it, and now I can do anything, sort of how it felt. Like, it really did feel that way, whereas it does feel uncomfortable. It is hard to like keep having to think about the things you're thinking about, and you have to stop and you have to slow down, and you have to even try to turn it off, you know, try to change the way your self-talk is going, and giving your time moments to do that. But it is so, I wouldn't say scary. The only word that I felt the whole time was uncomfortable, mm-hmm. uncomfortable. But the fact that, like, you know, I did it and I survived it is sort of that same feeling of the first time you like really eat shit.
And you still like yourself after?
And you still like yourself. Yeah. You still like yourself, or you still have like hope for a better future. Somehow, some way you're delusional enough to think, yep, I can do tomorrow.
Sometimes delusional is all you need to mm-hmm. do tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, all you got to do is get through tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then get through tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. I have a joke about suicide.
Yeah.
That is, it goes, well, don't worry, guys. I'm not sad. You know, you guys laughed really good tonight. So I guess I'll get off stage and whisper to myself, not today. And, and then I say, I'm going to get not today tattooed on my wrist as a nice little reminder, a little cheat sheet on my wrist. And then that way, when it is today, I can cross it off like a nice little to-do list. Anyways,
well, there you go. I think that's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, Isn't it?
Thanks for talking to me, Kristen.
Yeah, of course. That's a great way to end this, I think.
I think it's appropriate.
Not today.
Not today. Thanks.
Bye.
Well, what did I tell you? Am I right or am I right? She's amazing, right? That was such a great conversation. Make sure to go check out her comedy. She's got some great stuff up on YouTube. She's got a Facebook page. Go say hi to her. And also, hit the High Plains Comedy Festival happening right here in Denver, August 23rd through 25th. All kinds of great stuff happening. How Did This Get Made? David Cross. It's really going to be something special. And now, Christy Buckley. Well, that's it for me this week, everybody. I think I'm going to go and maybe check out a tattoo shop and, you know, maybe get some ink done. But you know what? I'm going to take that advice. Not today. Not today.